Coming to Northeast Wisconsin live from the Civic Media Studios and featuring TV and radio broadcast veteran John Mino, along with the City of Green Bay's longest-serving mayor, Jim Schmidt. This is Mino and the Mayor. Here are your hosts, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back. Mino and the Mayor here on a good-looking Thursday in Titletown. Ladies and gentlemen, this is our Packer throwback segment. And our very first guest is a gentleman I have not talked to in a lot of years, and I am honored to have him back. Ladies and gentlemen, Rich Moran, former Green Bay Packer guard. Rich, how are you doing, my friend?
You know what, living the dream in the third quarter, and it's nice to hear from you. It's been almost over three decades, right?
Isn't that incredible? We were all really young back then.
Yeah, you know, it's I always try to keep things, life can be complicated, but I try to keep it in quarters and simple. And I figured when I met you in the first quarter of life, which was zero to birth to 25, and the second quarter's 25 to 50, and then we all have a halftime adjustment, and now it's the 50 to 75, so just trying to make it to the fourth quarter.
Rich, one of the things, I don't know if people realize, but I remember the time, the legacy of your family in football was beyond anything I'd ever seen before. Can you describe that, your whole family's legacy in pro football?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting, as people always talked and you'd hear all these posts about why Jerry Kramer's not in the Hall of Fame and this, and I'd always pass around, I don't know if you got the email I sent you to Todd, it's a photo of my dad beating Jerry Kramer, just beating him for a sack on Bart Starr, right? And Yankee Stadium, and I'm like, well, the reason why he didn't get in the Hall of Fame is because my dad beat him like a drum for years at Green Bay. So, yeah, my late father played at University of Idaho like Jerry, and he went to Gonzaga Prep and basically had five kids by the time he left Idaho, and he played 4 or 5 years. And then my late brother, unfortunately, my dad passed at 57, and then my brother, late brother also, played for the Titans for about 3 years. And so, interesting enough, 86, my dad came to the game and we were playing my brother's team, and my dad put the scoreboards in Green Bay back in 86, and we all kind of had a reunion there. And I actually pulled and trapped a Childress, a guard there, a DN, and I hurt my medial collateral, and I ended up missing most of the season after that.
I remember after that game, it was you. I was trying to get some shots of you and your brother, who actually played for the Houston Oilers at the time.
Yeah, Houston Tide had converted,
Yeah, I still remember that, Rich. I still remember that. And you had a look on your face of, don't bother us right now. This isn't good, because you had hurt your knee and you didn't know how bad it was.
Yeah, you know, it seemed like it was my luck of getting hurt was always when I had the birth of a child, because it kept me home to babysit. You know what I mean?
Hey, Rich, we were talking here about the, I don't know if you've noticed on ESPN or wherever, how many fights there are in these joint training camp practices. I mean, that's like incredible. What about you guys? I remember times when you guys people don't understand the difference between training camp in your era and training camp now. You guys would be on the field at 8 o'clock in the morning, and you guys would be hitting, full speed hitting. You'd take a couple hours off in the afternoon, you'd come back, full speed hitting almost every practice. Pretty different from now, isn't it?
Yeah, for me, it was always a race to recovery, because I'd lose not 8 to 10 pounds every practice. So, you know, people out there who are your audience that do any exercise, and everyone's doing this ice tub stuff now. So what we would do is I'd jump in the ice tub right after practice, John, to cool my body temperature down. And then I'd race over and I'd have an ultra fuel. Then I have a power bar. Then I'd take my branched-chain amino acids and then cruise over to St. Norbert's, have lunch, eat as much as I could, try and regain the weight, get a half an hour nap, and boom, you're back out there at 2 for another 8 hour, 8 pound loss. And so, yes, it was definitely an error of of the players nowadays don't have because of the new collective bargaining agreement where they can only have 14 padded practices during the regular season, and then you only have one a days. And that's what Holmgren gave us our last couple of years, too, is Holmgren didn't beat us down. So it's almost like the practices we had with Holmgren was what the NFL went to in the CBA. The 49ers were always ahead of their time on not beating the players down that way.
And how about the Richard Jim Schmidt? I work with Johnny.
Yes.
What about the facilities? Tell me the difference. And we all followed you. It doesn't seem like it's that long ago, but
no.
I guess it kind of
when
was.
He said that 30 years
I know.
Ago.
Yeah.
That's what I said too. I thought, oh my gosh, is this the right guy we got on? But yeah, it's 30 years. But I'm sure you've been up here and through the new facilities.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting you bring that up. We did a podcast, me and Ron Holstrom were in Oshkosh, and we did a Rick and Ron Show podcast, and it only lasted four shows because Ron held out and wanted a big signing bonus. So
we typical Holstrom.
Yeah, I would never throw him under the bus. But
hey, who was his agent, Ken Rutgers?
So what? Yeah, no. Well, that was the year we all held out and held hands. It cost him Bob McGinn his job because, you know, we're all sitting here. I was NAA All-Pro, all through the Pro Bowl. We were 10-6, and four out of our five contracts were up of the starting line. And we're like, hey, wait a second. Why are we, if we're making $300,000, why is Tony Mandridge worth $1,000,001? And so we used Mandridge as our comp, which everyone is just like selling a house in the neighborhood, right? So we all held hands, and back then they couldn't replace you because there's no free agency.
Yeah.
And so he actually brought us up, but compensation-wise, Tony was the best thing to get you a pay raise because he couldn't play, and, you know, they paid him all this money. But going back to your deal, we did that Rich and Ron show. We actually, Campen was up there. He was in town. He was still coaching there. And he took us through all the facilities. And we actually got a picture of me and Ron and Campen in the facility and in the locker room. So it's interesting just, you know, between the meals and the cafeteria and, you know. But what hasn't changed is people make a big thing about the money. And the only reason is gotten a lot more publicity is because of the strike we went on and then the free agency and then having media contracts and televisions, you know, because you still got a 100-yard field, period. Okay, you still got a weight room. You're in a weight room, you know, the weights don't change, okay?
Yeah.
So just because you go in there and you're still going to listen to music. So when you undress it all, it really hasn't changed. It's still, you know, you have your weights, you work your technique, you watch film, and you play in a 100-yard field. So, but the hood ornament, okay, is a heck of a lot prettier now. You know what I mean?
It's unbelievable how much.
Yeah, it is.
And, you know, and when you look at that, but then it is the media contracts. I mean, they're in the bees now, you know. It's always
printing money.
It was $1 billion, and it's crazy how. I just want to ask you that you don't have to answer this if you don't want, but are you a little
I don't mind answering anything.
Are you a little bit jealous of that?
No, you know, no, but sometimes, you know, me and our friends get around and we talk about, hey, you know, it's too bad Pops couldn't hold back another 10 to 20 years, right? and we kid around. So, as a matter of fact, I think this is how John and I reconnected on Facebook. I haven't even got Instagram or TikTok, so I was messaging him, and he said something about the contracts guys got, and I was an agent for 17 years. Actually, I did a big contract. I made the highest paid fullback, a guy named Mike Carney, with Russ Ball in 2006 when he was with the Saints. And for the audience out there is when you really look at the money, like now I was doing a little homework for you guys. And I said, it looks like the cap's about $250 million. So when I did Sean Andrews' contract, the big $40 million deal with Andy Reid at the Eagles, is when I started doing homework, you look at percentages of the cap, and I analyzed all the 50 teams. And so back then, 50% of the salary cap went to 10 players.
Right.
So if you take, you know, for example, Love, and you take 10% of $250 million, you know, you look at his cap number, usually it's around 10 or 50% for a quarterback. Then you have a 5 to 10% for a left tackle. And you start picking about 10 guys, and it gets into about 50% of the cap goes to 10 guys, and then the rest goes to the rest of the players.
That's amazing when you think about that.
But what do you think about them carving out the quarterback? That's a separate part of the...
Well, you know, my, you know, the quarterbacks are the game. It goes into a depth question there, because you look at the Olympics and aren't they having the flag football passing league? You know, in reality, it's not football, okay? It's going to be at the Olympics, but you still don't have the quarterback that has to feel pressure in the pocket, see things, and get hit, which adds a whole nother layer. So, you know, it's just interesting to see where the game is going. You watch the national championship game. What did they do? You had a passing team against a running team with run tight ends and 21 personnel, which is two running backs, one tight end. You know, 10 personnel is one running back, zero tight ends. You're in 2x2, two receivers each side. Well, who won? Washington lost.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're seeing, why did the Baltimore Ravens sign a big running back? You know, the Ravens haven't won. Got there since who? Billick, who was my coach at San Diego State, and they ran the ball and they had a quarterback that didn't do very good. They had a great defense. So, you know, obviously you have a Brady, but the quarterback is really reflective of the cap number and the percentage that's allocated him. And but it's definitely don't touch the guy. But
the Golden Goose.
I remember. Yeah. But when Ron did his podcast, we talked about it. It was the first year that it was from his garage out there. And we talked about how what I like what the Packers were doing was bringing in a run-orientated guy, and they were forcing Rodgers to go under center and do traditional play action versus being a shotgun. And traditional shot, and with the shotgun play action, you have a second runner, the quarterback, but Rodgers wasn't a runner. So what they did with Love is they put him under center the whole, you know, a lot of the first half of the year, and they ran the ball. And it takes so much pressure off the quarterback if you run the ball.
Hey, Rich, we got to send it to a quick 1-minute break, and we'll be right back.
Yeah,
right? We're with Rich Moran, former Green Bay Packer, offensive guard. And you talk about things don't change. I'll tell you one thing that changed. People don't bring fast food into the locker room between practices anymore like they used to do for you guys. We'll be back right after this.
Okay.
Hey, welcome back. We're joined for our Packer Throwback Thursday with Rich Moran, former Green Bay Packer offensive guard and now a player's agent. Rich, we got a young intern here who's always wanted to be a sportscaster and he's never interviewed a Packer before. Would you mind just taking a question or two from him, Rich?
I just want to say that I retired as an agent in 2015.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to call you up to be my agent to negotiate a better contract.
Yeah. Well, like I said, the guys get paid a lot more. But, yeah, sure, no problem. The guy has a question.
His name is – okay, his name is – well, just – we call him KB, but just go ahead, young man.
Yes, sir. What would be your suggestion to getting into the radio scene?
Getting into the radio business?
Yes.
Or the agent business?
No, the agent business. The agent business.
Oh, I got you. Sometimes people see something in you don't see in yourself. And how I got into it was I was a union rep. In my eighth year in the NFL, my teammates elected me to be the union rep. And so the union rep, you know, I started asking myself when I retired, well, if these guys maybe see me as their rep my last 2 years and I voted for the collective bargaining agreement, maybe I could be an agent. I didn't have to move my family around because I wanted to go into coaching. And my dad, coincidentally, was my NFL agent. So for 9 years, I went to all the agents' meetings, and I used to fill up Gene Upshaw's car with gasoline. So I had this history of that. And what I did that really brought me to getting into the business is I took a guy out who just passed away about a month ago named Barry Axelrod. you know, so I knew my weakness. I could get with players, I could talk with them, and show them how to be better, KB. But I needed someone who had a little bit of history of doing contracts. And so Barry represented Biggio, Bagwell, Wally Joyner, Matt Clement, you know, and he was a partner with Marvin Demhoff. And so I took him out to lunch and I asked him if he would help me out. He got recertified, and for 2-3 years I'd sit there and I'd just model him and take notes, and he kind of helped me. So you'd have to find someone who's already an agent to try and do it. But I always try to tell people, if you can start either with the league office or a team level, like with Russ Ball, or with a league office, because it's just hard. I got out of it after a couple of my players got released on 7/29/2011. Sean Andrews and Stacey Andrews, after the new collective bargaining agreement, had $50 million under contract, and they got released. So 3% of 50 is about $1.5 million.
Okay, that's enough math. Rich, stop right there, please. That's enough math. I want to introduce you to the young man.
Hang on.
Rich, I followed you guys a lot in your younger days back in the early 80s. And I always admired how you looked up to Don Majkowski and Ron Hallstrom. Could you explain a little bit more to me on that one?
Well, you know,
It's Burkle.
It's KB.
It's Kevin. K. Burkle. Rich Moran.
This is Burke. Wait on. I can't do Kevin. Man. Well, you know, I can't tell you some of my best times, and I still leave obnoxious posts on his Facebook with going over to Nights on Main.
By the way, Kevin. you still have a bar tab there, just so you know. So
you
pay
can clean that up.
and Chuck Cecil.
He used to overserve me and got a year or two off my career.
Hey, wasn't that a great era for guys hanging out together, though? I used to do it. What was the name of the bar? First and 10. I'd do a show there in different places. Wasn't it a great era for guys hanging out together, Rich?
It just, to memorialize that, I remember in 92, they started having the off-season program. They charged $100. They would pay us $100 a week. So I'd out there, and that was the first week of it in April. We just traded from Brett. So next thing I'm over at Nights on Main with Kevin, we walk over to McSwiggin's, and next thing you know, we're over there, and some guy tries to start a fight who's at a bachelor party, and Brett flies over my shoulder, grabs my neck, don't mess with my lineman, right? And it was like, you're exactly right. It's just, it facilitated relationships, even though we didn't win, and Kevin is a big part of that, and just the guys you played with really did seem to have intangible relationships.
Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot of fun. Definitely, we had some good
Kevin,
times.
You were a big part of it, and we had a lot of fun. And I hope hope some of the players come over to your establishment now. And it definitely it brought intangible value to people, and it definitely was fun.
Well, Kevin is the actual sponsor of this new segment of ours, Packer Throwback Thursday, brought to you by Burkle's One Block Over. So we thought it'd be great to have him on as our secret interviewer.
Yeah, well, that's good.
And when he told me it was you, I'm like, I got to get on here this morning, because I remember how you also walked behind Hallstrom and tell him to pull up his pants. Remember that?
Well, we would say Ronnie, because he had the clipboard ass.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, Ronnie was just, I just hated me because I had to eat two dinners. Ronnie's 3:30. He's got to, you know, take his sparkling X-Lax the night before the weigh-in because he's got to drop weight. And then he's, you know, it was just easy for him to keep his weight on. But, he, you know, what people don't realize about Ron Hallstrom, I don't want to give him too much bub, but I'm going to. No, he was like Nolan Ryan. The guy never missed a practice. He never iced. He never was in the ice tub. He never got hurt.
Well, that's because he never hit anybody.
Yeah, that's, maybe you're right, too, but
training camp, he was always, you know, always had like a little bit of an injury, and so somebody'd fill him with him until game time.
You know, I still plagiarize Ronnie. You know what he's talking about? Ron, Rich, the older we get, the better we were.
Hey, Rich, we're talking to another guy you mentioned, Chuck Cecil. He brought a certain something to that team, both on and off the field, too, didn't he?
You know what? I got a story on him if you want to hear it.
Yeah.
But, okay, so I love Chuck. Quiet, very, in a way, a little bit like Don Davey, very polite, but then he had a few beverages over at Nicky's, right?
Mm-hmm.
and he was playing pool. Chuck loved to play pool. And so Chuck, I messed with the pool balls, right? He got pissed. He had that flip. He comes running at me. I pass pro'd him right in the chest, and I picked him up, and I threw him on top of the pool table at Nikki's, and I looked him in the face. I go, Chuck, and he had that fierce. He was going to kill me, right? I'm like, Chuck, I love him 180, okay? Because he was only 180 pounds, right? And yeah. He started laughing. So to this day, I still say, hey, Chuck, I love him 180. But he was, oh, God, he brought the boom, right? And he was just, him and Timmy Hawk, the other kid that was great was Timmy Hawk.
Timmy, yeah. Same
he
size?
Played for 14. Yep, they were best friends. So, yeah, you're hitting some old.
I think that stories. Was the night, Rich, I think I was at Nikki's that night, and that's the night I walked into the men's room, and Chuck was punching out the towel thing.
Yeah.
The towel thing. Yeah,
that's it.
And his knuckles
were
all bleeding.
Every once in a while, a little full contact drinking is okay. You know what I mean? So.
I love that term, full contact drinking.
I got to tell you my Chuck Cecil story. So, when I used to travel with you guys with Channel 2.
Right, right.
And we're in Houston. And it's right before the half. And I can't remember who the player, the offensive or the receiver was, but I was standing like 2 feet from when Chuck Cecil hit this guy. It sounded like a truck hitting a car. The guy never got up. The guy never got up. And Cecil's just laughing all the way to the locker room with his nose bleeding.
Yeah.
You know, while you guys are talking about throwbacks, and I got one story. I don't know if you might want to hear a Forrest Gregg story that ties into the modern day money that these players are making.
We're only got about 30 seconds left, Rich.
This is worth it. Okay, so I'm 53 man roster. I'm at the first team meeting, right? And when you compare today's modern day football players, the money they make to back then, here's what Forrest told us. Gentlemen, welcome to the Green Bay Packers. You guys are on the 53-man roster, and welcome. He goes, men, you never get a better job than this. You work 6 months out of the year. You get paid an executive salary to play a game. He goes, the only way...
U.S. and on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Take Mino and the Mayor with you everywhere. Now, once again, Mino and the Mayor, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back, Mino and the Mayor. Great having Rich Moran, former All-Pro guard for the Green Bay Packers and 15 years as a NFL agent joining us. Who do we got coming up next, Todd? Oh, we don't have Pat. Okay, we're gonna try to get Rich back, right? Because we lost him right during the middle of that story with Forrest Gregg that people didn't hear. And we want to finish this story. So we're going to try to get hold of Rich again. Wasn't he fun?
Yeah, he's great.
Yes. Yeah. Because there's a couple more old-time stories I want to talk to him about from that era.
Yeah, I'd be interested in some of his agent stories, too. I mean, being an agent is, you know, I bet that's very interesting because you take somebody who's got potential or somebody who's really good. But we can talk about it. 1986. When did he play?
Yeah, 86, I think, was his first year. Okay. You know one thing, though, that people, modern players, don't have enough respect for? Those guys in 87, they walked the picket line. I mean, I think somewhere along the line, I still have one of their signs, you know, with their union. I mean, they missed three paychecks, three games that year, and then had to come back. You know, it was kind of broke. But I don't, and without that, and you know what? Those guys didn't benefit from it.
It was the next crop.
It was the next crop that benefited from that. And I don't think the modern players, and Kevin's still with us here, but Kevin, I don't think the modern players appreciate those guys that sacrificed, in some cases, their careers. Because I'll tell you what, some of those coaches took it personal on guys and cut them because of that. And I know there's supposed to be laws against that, right? Yeah,
there are labor laws or whatever. Yeah,
you can't do that. No, but you can say, you missed that block, whatever. And
you think that doesn't happen?
In the real world, too? Yeah. Oh, okay. But what I'm saying is I don't think there's enough appreciation from the current guys towards the guys from that era for leading the way and getting free agency.
Well, I agree. I mean, those guys literally took a beating.
They did.
I mean, no question.
From the public, as well as coaching.
No, I remember people harassing them. Hey, Rich, are you back?
Yes, sir.
Great. I'm sorry. Our next guest couldn't join us, so we wanted to pick it up. What we're talking about is we don't think the modern guys have enough respect for what you guys went through in 87, which in some ways, and Jim and I were just talking about this, and he knows labor law as well as anybody, and as do you, but
I guarantee you there were guys that coaches or general managers, they took it personal. You guys walk out on strike. And I know there's laws that you can't penalize somebody for being in a union and going out on strike. But I guarantee you there are behind-the-scenes conversations of, okay, we're getting rid of that guy. Don't you agree?
You know, it's interesting. I don't 100% agree, but I will tell you it's in life people sometimes want what someone else has. So it's something that comes in our thoughts, but you have to manage, hey, was I fortunate? Do I have enough? Right. So you get into the whole society has that. But to get specific, you know, you're talking about two things. Let's talk about the quarterback club. Okay. We're on strike. We're losing, trying to start a group licensing agreement because the group licensing went to the NFLPA and then we were going to raise money to fight the litigation. See, we went on strike. We decertified as a union for 5 years and then we filed the lawsuit with Judge Doty in Minneapolis with the Reggie White lawsuit. If we wouldn't have won that lawsuit, we wouldn't have had free agency. Okay, so you go back to during that period. Well, guess what happens? The NFL's smart. They go to all the quarterbacks, I won't name names, and they all got paid, and they were diverting funds through the licensing agreement to the quarterback club. And then that quarterback club, those guys got paid, but we didn't. So they hurt the regular guy. Guys could say whatever they want. Those guys that took that quarterback club meeting, it was all selfish.
Wow, okay. They took it
to advance themselves, and they were screwing all of us regular guys that were holding the picket signs and going, you know, trying to raise money. So they tried to keep it quiet, and then that came out, okay? And so that was specific about it. However, what they did do, the current players, is they voted in the last CBA, they gave us a bump. So we got $1,400. For example, my pension credit went up, you know, $1,500 a year, okay, because they created what's called a legacy a couple years ago. You have the regular pension, Burt Bell, and then you have what's called a legacy fund. The legacy fund was created because of the past players advocating internally to the executive board to create something for the past players. And they did. And they also gave us a health savings account, which I get reimbursed when I pay my medical premium for my days of being at Kevin's bar. Okay. I can then go get help from the residual damage he caused. Okay. So you get a health savings account, you get all these other benefits. So they're doing it now. It's just that there's such huge wealth, and it goes back to Forrest Gregg. It's a joke. I listen to your guys' podcast. You talk about businesses and you're starting business. Football is a joke. It's easy compared to a guy that has to have payroll. Those are the modern day heroes, the employers. And I never learned that until my dad died and I had to run his business for a while and I'm payroll. Payroll is pressure. It ain't a 2-minute warning. So the real heroes are the modern day employers. Football is half the year. And Forrest Gregg was right. So, yeah. But I'm not jealous because these guys made a lot more. But going back to Ron Holmstrom, I texted him the other day. I go, hey, Ronnie, they made the highest paid guy in the NFL, offensive lineman, out of Iowa. He's making $28 million a year. You almost made $1 million a year. Does that mean that guy's 28 times better than you?
I'd have to go with a yes.
I'd say yes.
I do
want to say on the business side, and I do teach that. What they have is unbelievable with the cap and collar, right? I mean, you get X amount of money, but you can only spend so much. You're guaranteed a profit, and then you can bring in revenue from, you know, skyboxes and merchandise and everything else. So
That's called total revenue. It used to be a signing bonus.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how complicated you guys want to get it, but it used to be like this. You got a signing bonus, gentlemen. That was it.
Rich, well, I have a question, Rich. What did you do with that $1,500?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, that had to be a...
You know what?
Where did you go?
I kept it away from my ex-wife.
Oh, perfect.
Well, let's not mention that. Todd, strike that from the podcast.
Yeah. I'm going to get served for tomorrow for that, right? So...
I would agree that, I mean, you're not going to see an NFL franchise go under.
Fold, no.
No.
They're worth billions.
Because there's some other professional sports that would love to have that agreement of the cap and collar. You get $250 million, you can only spend X, so you're guaranteed X. But that's not the real world, like you said, Rich. I mean, these business people,
not even close. And Forrest was right. I always say it, and I never realized it until, like I said, my dad died. I had to pay $1.9 million in his estate taxes. Then I had to fund the business, and I had payroll. And I'm like, the people out there, the heroes are the guys getting up, the owners that are funding the employers' salaries that pay for the kids' schooling, and they're there. There's not millions of people lining up and riding your bikes and giving you rides in there when you got to sit here and work in the shop. Those are the heroes. Amen. Those are the blue-collar people. It's not guys that work half the year.
What a great point.
I mean, you're getting paid to lift weights, kick dudes' asses, okay, and do it again. Okay, and guess what? If it doesn't go good that week, you get the next week to rectify it or the next play. In business, it takes years. You got payroll. Might have a presentation. It has long sales cycles. They're not even comparable. People compare football to business. It's bullshit.
And the other thing that they have, Rich, is they
try not to say that word again.
Yeah, it's limited competition. You know, they've stood up and said they're going to hold this at 32 teams. They're not going to expand the league, which is good for the franchise.
And these other leagues that start up aren't competition.
What's going on this year? These guys are smart. It's just like I did that Paul Rudy segment, and I talked down here, and I talked about the ex-Hall of Famers trying to get these extra benefits. And I'm like, hey, forget these Hall of Famers. What about all the other players? My dad played. Why should they not get benefits? They went about it the wrong way. They went after the NFL owners, 32 owners, okay? And they tried to threaten them. They won't be part of the Hall of Fame if you don't give us these benefits. What I'm leading up to is where's the opener this year? The National Football League.
Yep. Not in the United
States.
Green
Bay Packers. Yeah. It's in Brazil.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And okay. While you're on that subject, Rich, let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, how frustrating is that to the fans and the taxpayers of the city of Green Bay last year to lose, was it last year or the year before? We lose the home game to England. I mean, that comes out of, you know, the citizens and the taxpaying business owners of Green Bay to take our home game and send it somewhere else.
I didn't know it was a home game. I thought that was a
home
game.
It was a home game. I'm positive. Because
that is unique. But when those people, I try to tell people, you know, if you ever get a chance, okay, we did this. We did a father-son trip 15 years ago, and I always wanted to play at Notre Dame. Flew into Chicago, boom, stayed overnight, went down to the Purdue game against Notre Dame, then boom, went over to Green Bay game, okay? And I sat in the stands there, Kevin, for the first time in my life. And I'm sitting there going, oh, my God, how fortunate I was to do this, right? So they're growing the game, and just think of all those people that do get a chance to come over here, and they go into Kevin's, you know, Burkle's next door, which is a great
one block
place.
Over.
Burkle's one block over.
One block over.
But thanks for giving them a pop.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Rich.
The next door, Burkle's next door.
Yeah, whatever, next block, one block, two blocks over.
Just remember one thing. It's not CTE because I gave CTE, Kevin, okay? So
hey, Rich, I got to ask you a couple of football questions. Number one, do you remember, as much as you guys got do you remember the fight in the locker room between a couple of big linemen?
Yeah, okay, you're talking about this big, huge Afro-American who fought.
No, not Charles.
This guy was during the strike year, or he was a strike player, and he was a start against Hampton. I mean, I think it was Richard Dent. He was talking smack, and Tom Neville and him got in a fight.
Okay, no, I remember Ken Rutgers, and I can't remember the defensive line. No, he's an offensive, a big guy from Auburn.
Donnie Humphreys?
No, wait.
Oh, that was
Kevin there. I don't remember.
He's offensive.
I don't remember locker room fights. I remember a lot.
He was a guard
fight.
From Auburn, big redneck kind of guy. Good guy.
Oh, you mean Keith Uecker?
Yeah.
That's it.
Oh, I forget who he got in a fight with. I like Keith, but I don't remember that. In the lock, maybe some oral shouting matches. And, you know, you'd get into this whole political, I'm not going to get into black white thing and all this, but I always remember Timmy Harris.
Yeah.
He'd always say, it's a white thing. And he was the most unracist guy, and he would get around.
Wow. And it never was. I feel for people who've never been in a locker room because you got a melting pot. And I think when you sweat and you do something physical, people, it breaks down all the barriers, you know, and you didn't have, I know everybody talks about that. And, you know, in society now is because there's no filter between the brain and the fingers. Right. And they're all behind a keyboard. But, you know, I think you don't have that in sports that you have. Everybody talks about it. Right.
I got a great text here. It says, I gave CTE. This guy is great. I just got that text.
Well, they all talked about it. And that was another class action people don't talk about, is that when I was an agent, okay, the lawsuit basically said every play you hit, you get a concussion. Okay. Well, first of all, when you play offensive line, why it's such a difficult position is you're a basketball player, you're backing up, and then you're punching like a boxer. Well, you don't want to put your nose over your toes to pass block. You want to be like a defender on defense in basketball. So you don't hit with your head when you're backing up and the guy's a yard away. They tried to say in the lawsuit that every play you get a concussion. Well, if you got a play to the right, the receivers on the left aren't hitting anybody. The guys that really got the impact were the safeties and the fullbacks getting hit by a Mark Murphy.
Right.
Not the ones that are yard away.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure, they get the speed to come up there, and yeah, that, yes, that.
So, I don't know. It's just football has gone to what the rules, and it's trickled down to the no double days. It's gone to what the Walsh did, where you don't have all of the hitting. And we were fresher. I mean, at the end of a Holmgren season, you're sitting there going, God, I could go another 10 games, right? Wow. So,
hey, Rich, we got set it to another quick break, a 1 minute break. We're going to have you back for the rest of the show for the next 10 minutes. Is that cool?
Sure.
Awesome.
I love this. This is fun.
We're with awesome. Rich Moran. Hey, welcome back, Mino and the Mayor. It's the Packer Throwback Thursday, brought to you by Burkle's One Block Over. Our very special guest is Packer offensive lineman Rich Moran. And Rich, one other thing I just have to, I know you get every place you've ever gone, I'm sure they say, who is the toughest defensive lineman you ever went up against? But I'm gonna make it a little bit more local, because you guys hit every day in practice, live scrimmages. Who was the toughest Packer defensive lineman you had to go against?
Two contrasting questions, but as you become a veteran, you start going, how do I make it through the season? So I will just tell you that on the way down to the practice schedule, I'd look over to him and I say, Gilbert Brown, I can't block you. You understand? I can't block you. I need to make it through the season. Gilbert, will you please take it easy on me? Okay. So you massaged your guys who you had to go against.
Funny.
When it was your period, okay? Because you have these guys that are on practice squad trying to make the 53-man, and they've been, you know, they're out on Friday and Saturday night getting overserved at Burkle's, okay? And they're fresh, and you're beat up, and you don't want to go hard on Wednesday and Thursday. You're just trying to get your looks. So you try to, your question is, if it's your period and you're a starter, you're not going against, you're trying to calm your guy down who's not trying to get beat on, if that makes sense.
And he's trying to impress the coaches to get playing
time.
Right.
Yeah. And it can be a complete nightmare. Okay. So Gilbert was the one that I had to say, because he was just coming in.
Right.
Okay. And so that was the other guys. He had a couple guys like John Dorsey, who was all, he was a thief. You talk about the Patriots. Okay. John Dorsey would go up into the, you guys all know John Dorsey. He'd go up into there and he'd get the script of the offensive script. So on practice, he knew exactly the play was, and he'd make all these plays. Okay. So you had guys that knew the period and this, and this, but going into the regular season, what the nightmare players, and this is a templated answer, is boom, Keith Millard. And I talked him into playing football. It was the stupidest thing I ever did. We went to high school together. Madden was our quarterback, John's son.
Oh, my God.
he was a soccer player, and I go, hey, you come out for football. Why didn't I have to play against him for 9 years? And Kevin, and Millard's been in Kevin's bar, okay? So, you know, he was the toughest. Then you had a guy by the name of Jumpy Gathers, who tore Aaron Taylor's patella tendon when he was blocking him his rookie year. He had the forklift. He was a complete nightmare. Then you had Frank Warren and Joe Klecko. Those are the four inside guys that were nightmares that I would say camping. If it was my contract year, don't help Ronnie, help me. Okay? So those were guys that you literally were scared of, okay? And then inside linebacker-wise, it was Harry Carson's.
Giants.
So what you did not hit Harry is you just laid on the nose guard longer, and you made sure you didn't have the head-to-head collision with Harry. Okay, so he was – Sam Mills was really good. Those are the inside backers, so I look at him as Bubbles and the D linemen.
You know who I really liked was Tony Bennett. Tony Bennett was a great guy.
A great, phenomenal
and
guy.
And a phenomenal right. – that guy was tough.
Yeah, he definitely – he just needed to work out a little bit more. He had too much body fat.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, right.
Oh, my God. I got to tell you this real quick, Rich. I shared a hotel room with him for 3 days on a turkey hunting trip to Richland Center.
Yeah, he was a big hunter, yes.
Yeah, and I don't mean to be whatever, but he'd come walking out of the shower with a towel wrapped around and oiling up his pecs. And it's like – yeah. God did not create us all equal.
We won't go there.
Well, we were in a bar, me, him, and Brian Noble, and there's this line of women, and it's like, wow, it's that backed up to go into the thing. He was in there, one woman at a time would come over to, and he'd kiss them, make out with them. There's a line of women in this bar in Richland.
He was just a solid guy. Yeah, this has been really fun talking to you guys. Maybe we'll rename the segment to Minor, Mayor, and Moron in the Morning. Anyway, that's what the ex-wife calls you when I spell it now. I go, she just spells it with an O. Instead of an A. But
so you have great spirit. What are you doing now? I mean,
you know what? I actually kind of had three different careers. I had the NFL job playing, then I rolled into the agent business. But I always wanted to coach. I did that for like 17 years. One of my clients, two of my clients are the Purdue offensive line coach now, Marcus Johnson, and Michael Spurlock, who was coaching with Passacci there. He's down at Southern Miss. And then when I wound the long-term marriage down, I'm going, why shouldn't I do what the hell I want to do? Okay. And I started doing some coaching because I was at Oceanside High School for years. Mm-hmm. So I've been kind of around the country doing a little bit of coaching intermittently. Right now I'm in a holding pattern, just been working on my house and out here in Carlsbad trying to build my radio resume.
Nice. Hey, you know, you mentioned about your ex-wife, who I knew her very well, because
Lisa,
another thing back then, the Packer wives were a big entity. Remember the Packer wives fashion shows?
Oh, yeah. Well,
and
yeah.
Things like that.
Oh, yeah.
That
was
huge. They were heavily involved.
I told my dad, I asked Lisa to marry me. He's on the phone, and the phone, you tell your dad you're getting married, the phone was really quiet, John. And he goes, son, do you know Lisa's a show pony?
Oh, geez.
I go, well, first of all, we went to high school, right? And I'm like, well, what's that, Dad? He goes, son, they're very good looking, they're very temperamental, and they're very expensive.
Again, Todd, strike that from the podcast, please. Wow. We don't need a lawsuit. Yeah, yeah.
No, we're still good friends. You made it 30, and Kevin, and that wives show and all that was fun, and I love Lisa still to this day, and we still get along, and we're good. But you know, you make light of serious subjects sometimes.
But they
right?
were so nice. So, I mean, John Dorsey's wife, Sherry, is still a great friend of mine.
You know, the one thing that I really realized gets you off injured reserve, though, is I remember I hurt my knee that 86 when I got hurt. Hurt my knee in that game. You know, you're at home. So you go over to some of the Packer wives, you know, and you got Pam Murphy, you have Julie Uecker, you got Ken Rucker's wife, and you're sitting there listening to them talk while you're watching the game. You're going, I got to get the hell off IR. So, you enjoyed it. Were core ladies.
They were taking care of us.
Yeah, they were taking care of you. Can I get you something? Can I get you something, Rich? Uh-huh. You big stud. Yeah.
Rich, you are incredible. I'm so glad I got to talk with you, and we got to do this again. This is a lot of fun.
Well, you know
what?
I really enjoyed it. Like I said, it was interesting. I did a little thing with Paul Rudy out here, and he was with Larry McCarron, right? So he had me on the feature at KUSI, and then Ron and I did that little, couldn't get Kevin Burkle, the sponsor.
We're big time. That's the difference.
And Ronnie wanted too much, so we did those four shows. It was kind of nice to do this. I've never really done it, but it's been kind of enjoyable. And,
love it.
Been awesome for us.
Very fond memories.
Thank you, my friend. Rich Moran, always a pleasure. Let's keep it going, okay, buddy?
Yeah, all right, gentlemen. Nice visit with you, seriously, and go Pack, and let's all try to make it to the fourth quarter, right?
Sounds good, buddy. Thanks, everybody. See ya.